Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing.
Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Hello, welcome, greetings to everyone this evening. Thank you for joining us on Tando Radio Show. Today is Friday, the 18th of May, 2018. And it is myself, Ross, on the show. I'll also have my co-host, Jenna Kepra. He's actually just taking care of something right now. He'll be on shortly. But we do have a live show for you today. Brother Dave is doing some things he needs to take care of as well. So that's why we're doing the show this evening. So thank you for joining us this evening. We're going to basically take care of some of the things we normally do before we get into today's show. First, please continue to support Black Talk Radio Network so that we can have this network to continue to provide the programming and information that we provide to you all. Those of you who do partake of these different shows, we just need your help so that we can continue to do what we do. If you do get constructive information from what we do, and especially for those who are regular listeners, please, you know, donate. You can donate at blacktalkradionetwork.com. There is a donate button there where you can donate via PayPal, or you can also, I believe it's email, Scotty, if you needed like a physical mailing address. If you don't use PayPal or something of that nature, there are other options available to you. Also, another option would be to join BTR Community. That is the Black Social Media Network created by Scotty for us, in which it's basically a closed community so that your information is protected. You don't have to worry about having your data being mined and given to other people or anything of that nature. You're able to have conversations with people online who have a lot of great information to provide, including quite a few of the radio show hosts that are on Black Talk Radio Network as well, also post on there and have quite lively discussions about a myriad of different topics pertaining to our people and things that we can do to help each other as well. So you can join BTR community for $24 a year. That will break down to $2 a month. And ultimately, that way you'll be able to partake of the different discussions and get the information that's available to you at Black Talk, BTR community as well. So please, do that. I think right now you still can do the trial where you can do a one-month trial of BTR community. And then after the 30 days, you have the option of continuing by creating a subscription. So I believe that is still something that is available. So please partake of it and join us. It'll be really great to have you on there, and you can help facilitate the discussions that we have on there about all the different topics that we do talk about. So that being said, also for those who are looking to actually take their cash income, their financial energy that they get from their job, and convert that to real money, please go to Prosperity Mint. At prosperitymint.com, you'll be able to actually make purchases of precious metals. Just let them know that you are a Tanzo Radio Show listener, and they'll be able to get you information that you need before you make the purchase. Again, that's prosperitymint.com, and there you'll be able to get precious metals like silver, gold, platinum, palladium, and rhodium, which is basically what the world system, financial system, is transitioning to at this time. So it'll be advantageous to do so, because with all of the basically huge war paradigm that we have already shifted into, it just hasn't gotten hectic to the point where it's directly affecting us yet, but at some point it will. Ultimately, once that does take place, then precious metals and the sale of precious metals is going to come to a screeching halt, and you'll be locked out at that point. So it's just something that you just want to have to kind of freeze that energy that you put into working for potentially someone else, or even working for yourself. And rather than keeping it in dollars that it's basically going to end up being worth nothing down the road, it's already worth nothing now, it's just that we're not feeling that yet. But ultimately, it'll be a lot better, because we'll be shifting to an economy that's based on precious metals instead. So if you have those precious metals, and silver is the most precious metal, then that's the one that you want to get your hands on. So,
asset based. That's what you're trying to say.
Thank you, Jenna. Yes, yes, asset based economy. That's exactly the term. Thank you very much. So now that we're moving to an asset based economy, that is, precious metals are probably the best assets to have a hold of. Not saying that other things aren't money either, like water, food, things of that nature is going to be important. Medical supplies, ammunition, weapons, all of those things are also forms of money themselves. But the best form of money is precious metals, because you can get a lot accomplished with just an ounce of said precious metal, depending on the circumstances and where the world economy is. So that's pretty much the reason for that. And ultimately, hey, Jenna, was there anything I missed now that I think about it?
No, you did it all, brother. Just go ahead on and continue to open up the show. Let me take care of these children real quick.
No problem. So, yeah, I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything. All right, so we're going to get into an interesting topic today, which will be the title of today's show, Should We Question Our Rights? So just to give a little insight into that, for there to be a little more clarity, I'm going to just actually read the blurb as well so that it makes sense. Okay, so should we question our rights? In lieu of conversations surrounding the UCC codes and liberating a straw man to liberate oneself from the corporation, there is serious cognitive dissonance around the issue of the usefulness of this strategy in the people activity area called law versus the reality of being black and considered black by our white colonizers in the system of white supremacy. We will dissect the story of a former U.S. Marine Corps officer who was white and attempted to exercise his quote-unquote rights using the Constitution and UCC codes at a routine traffic stop, and he ended up getting mauled by a 100-pound Belgian Malinois and assaulted by state troopers in a system where we black people are being executed extrajudicially on a daily basis, where the people in power who classify themselves as white and classify us as black regardless of our self-classification is telling black people to explore this as an option to free themselves, putting themselves in danger. especially when we are on the precipice of economic disaster and moving towards an openly fascist government structure where the Constitution is already no longer valid and the president is given unlimited power over the military. So that's pretty much what it's boiling down to. It's not necessarily the validity of that information. It's more or less the application of it in a system where it's not going to be followed or considered valid. And part of that discussion is just surrounding, actually Scotty and Jenna were talking about this earlier, but just the killings of black people who were sovereign citizens, and they had that same approach with liberating their straw man and ended up dead. Now, this was a white guy who did the same thing and almost ended up dead, but really got himself hurt. And ultimately, us thinking about that as in this particular climate, is that a viable strategy that we should be searching to explore or seeking to explore at this particular time? Is it something that where we really need to deal with reality for what it really is? And the fact that none of that really matters when it's all said and done, and you're looking at an officer face to face who is ready, willing, and able to take your life if they felt like it. So that's pretty much the premise of what the major discussion will be. We will get into some of these posts here because some of them actually went into this discussion as well. Okay, so there's a couple things I wanted to touch on. There was the first one is from USA Today, and I'm just going to actually open it up so I could read a little bit of it, not get too crazy, but just get some important points off of it. I'm just waiting for it to load up. But this is on USA Today, and it's an article where it says Congress gives police in other countries easier access to United States data, raising privacy concerns. So this is basically a ruling that that Congress made, allowing police in other countries to be able to now, well, let me read it. It just says police in other countries will be able to get emails and other electronic communication more easily from their own citizens and from Americans under a bill that Congress stuffed inside a massive $1.3 trillion spending deal that passed last week. Supporters said the bill, dubbed the Cloud Act, will simplify the process for the U.S. government and its allies to get evidence of serious crimes and terrorist threats when that evidence is stored on a server in another country. Internet providers have been able to legally stop police agencies from gaining access to their own citizens' emails if those emails were stored in a foreign nation. Microsoft stores data on about 1 million servers in 40 countries. Quote, the Cloud Act can save lives, preserve international relations, empower law enforcement, and ensure justice for citizens, unquote, said James Scott, senior fellow at the Institute for Critical Infrastructure Technology. Opponents, including civil liberty and privacy rights groups, said the law can make it easier for nations with human rights abuses to spy on dissidents and collect data on Americans who communicate with foreign nationals. Quote, tucked away in the omnibus spending bill is a provision that allows Trump and any foreign president to share Americans' private emails and other information with countries he personally likes, says Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon. Quote, that means he can strike deals with Russia or Turkey or with nearly zero congressional involvement and no oversight by U.S. courts. In a letter to Congress, American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Human Rights Watch, and other civil liberties groups said the Cloud Act allows foreign governments to wiretap on American soil using standards that don't comply with U.S. law and gives the executive branch the power to enter into agreements with other nations without congressional approval. The 24 groups said the law permits foreign police agencies to get information about people in the USA without having to follow search and seizure rules imposed by the U.S. Constitution, and it could give foreign governments access to information they could use to torture their critics. Quote, we believe the Cloud Act undermines privacy and other human rights as well as important democratic safeguards, unquote, the letter says. The bill won the support of Microsoft and other tech giants who said it will clarify how internet providers are supposed to respond when law enforcement agencies seek data across borders. Microsoft President and Chief Legal Officer Brad Smith said in a blog post Wednesday that congressional passage of the Cloud Act is, quote, is a critical step forward in resolving an issue that has been the subject of litigation for over 4 years, unquote. Quote, it's a strong statute and good compromise that reflects recent bipartisan support in both chambers of Congress, as well as support from the Department of Justice, the White House, the National Association of Attorneys General, and a broad cross-section of technology companies, unquote, Smith wrote. Quote, it responds directly to the needs of foreign governments frustrated about their inability to investigate crimes in their own countries, unquote, and I'll stop there. But ultimately, if they're making it that easy for another country to just come in and get your emails and probably your phone call, because the NSA has been recording all of that stuff, even though they claim they haven't done anything with the data, but they have it on everybody. And then who's to say too? Because a lot of people also have, if you're dealing with like Ancestry.com, 123andMe, and those places, they put your DNA results online. Most of those people get like an email, and in the email, it'll tell you, you know, you have to log into the site to get that information. And we saw that with the, I think he's called the Golden State Killer, that they were able to go into those records using DNA from a relative of his in order to connect him to the crimes that he was accused of. So I could see that happening in with these foreign governments as well, as far as them taking DNA information that's stored on servers in the United States and using it, you know, for those purposes or against other people in their country, like they were saying before, dissidents in their country. So it really says a lot about the loss of freedom on a global scale, and it just really speaks to the nationalist versus globalist agendas and how they're working with each other, because that is more of a globalist type of policy that's being applied, you know, by our government that signed it into law now. So it's just quite telling to me. But I just think it's a huge loss of privacy in regards to the ability to keep your information away from foreign governments. And then, of course, we already know the invasive power of the United States itself. So just something for us to ponder upon as things move forward.
Brother Ross.
Yes, sir.
I was one of the things that I pay attention to the Constitution quite often. Got a few books on it, and I stay up on these particular aspects of the Constitution. And one of the rules when the Constitution is in play is that one judicial branch cannot transfer the power to make laws to the other. And in that article, One of the main things that stuck out to me is that there was going to be a transfer of power.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was the judicial branch couldn't transfer power, but it was the judicial branch that was transferring power to the executive branch, which is,
and Congress is the one who gave this law life. They're the
right,
ones who gave life into it. So go ahead, I'm sorry.
So what I'm saying is that I've been saying for quite some time now that the Constitution has been dismantled. These are small pieces that let people know that it has been, only if you pay attention to the Constitution the way that people say they do. So as we get further along into the show, we're gonna dissect that. But go ahead and continue, brother.
I have a question for Jenna. Jenna, when you use the word dismantle the Constitution, do you think that's accurate, or would it be more accurate to say they don't follow the Constitution? Because to demand, let me give an example. Alcohol prohibition used to be a constitutional amendment. They passed an amendment saying that you can't sell alcohol. That was later repealed and removed from the Constitution, so it was no longer a constitutional amendment. So do you think it's more accurate to say that they're not following the Constitution in terms of being dismantled?
Scotty, that's actually a great question, and I could be wrong by using the word dismantle, but the reason I use the word dismantle is because it's no longer in play, meaning that it's not being used at all. We can see plenty of examples of where if the Constitution was in play, we always hear people say that you're violating my constitutional rights. That would only be the case if the Constitution was the law of the land. And that's why I use dismantle. So I could be wrong in my description, but I don't think that they're not just following it, because if that was the case, some of the people that have money, black or white, would be getting some results from some of the things that's happening around this country. And that's why I use the terms that I use. But once again, I could be wrong on that, but they haven't repealed anything. They're just not, they haven't repealed anything, and I don't think that they're not following it, because they're absolutely just going against everything. For one, we was just talking about when you say that they repealed the alcohol prohibition.
Yeah, I think it was called the 19th Amendment, but I'm not sure.
I don't have the book in front of me right at this moment, because I'm in transit. That's why I'm and I apologize about that. I got some instructions on the last minute. My mother. So
I think you have a caller that wants to weigh in, but
I think that's Brother Otis. Hold on a second, Brother Otis.
Yeah. Hold up, Brother Otis.
What I'm saying is that I use dismantle is because it's been broken down. For instance, the police state that we live in, that's unconstitutional. All of these people getting dragged out of their cars, that's unconstitutional. Yet it's a regular practice, and what do we always hear? I said this on Tanya Free and Friends on Wednesday. They're saying exactly what's been told to them. They're following the instructions that they have been given, but yet we steadily say that's not how it's supposed to work. But they continuously tell us this is how it works. So from the examples that they are setting, it tells me, from reading the Constitution myself, it tells me that it's no longer in play. Once again, that's why I use the terminology that I use.
Let me give you a couple of examples to further clarify what I'm saying, and then we can toss it to Otis. For example, Ron Paul talks a lot about war powers, and that the Constitution says that only Congress can declare war. Now, the criticism is that the legislative branch, which is Congress, has given up that power and ceded that to the executive branch, which is the president, in what we call, Patriot Act. And, you know, not even declaring war, but giving the president the authority to just go and bomb whatever country he wants to bomb for whatever reason, in the name of fighting terrorism or spreading democracy. Well, that the War Powers Act section of the Constitution, which again says that only Congress can declare a war on another nation, that has never been repealed. They just don't follow it. They have ceded that authority to the executive branch, I would say, going back, beginning with possibly Kennedy, but I'm not sure, but I know for sure George Bush. Now, this is why I say the Constitution, an example of why I say the Constitution is still in play. Okay, it's just that they picking and choosing. Because if that was the case, nobody would be able to go to civil court and sue a police department, sue a city, a municipality, or sue a private business and be awarded anything. Those cases would just simply, when you go to file a case, they just simply say, oh no, we don't do that no more. So I hope I'm clarifying where I'm coming from. If you want to respond before we toss it back to Otis.
Oh yes, yes. I understand exactly what you're saying, and I'm actually on the same path line as you. It's because, like you said, that under the Constitution, you're not supposed to be able to transfer those powers, as you just stated. You know, they get locked up for that. So with them knowing the Constitution and acting in these manners anyway, somebody would say something if it was in play. that's my, and I know we don't supposed to assume, but that's my assumption. We have people speaking out about everything that goes on in Congress. It's always at least one, and nobody has ever mentioned that. Never mentioned that at all. And that's what lets me know, like Brother Dave says, also yourself, two wings of the same bird. You know, they all in cahoots with this. They know what they want to do, and they're doing what they want to do, but they give us just enough rhetoric to make us believe that it's still in play. And as long as we believe that it's still in play, then they can operate in the manner that they feel. If that makes any sense to you, Brother Scotty. And then we could toss it to Brother Otis.
Brother Otis?
When you get done.
No, I'm done. Yes, Otis?
Good evening, gentlemen. I was just trying to add a little bit of clarification because it's strange. I've been researching some of the same stuff. And I think what's happened here is because Scotty brought it up too, the Patriot Act. But the Patriot Act has about 100 different sections in it. And what Congress and the president have been fighting about is since Bush and then again with Obama, the authorization for use of military force has been mixed in along with the NNDA for security, Homeland Security. So the constitutional rights basically have been held in abeyance, meaning not totally used in its truest sense, because some of those rights have been suspended for the sake of supposedly Homeland Security. So that's part of what the argument is.
Good examples, Otis. Good examples of American citizens being targeted with drones when they leave to go overseas.
Yes. That's what I was about to say. Because see, what has happened is those two things have been conflated for the furtherance of war without actually declaring war. See, we've never actually declared war. What they did was give the president authorization to use military force. And then they turn around and said part of fighting terrorism has now come to domestic or homeland. Right. So they're skirting the rules and basically holding your constitutional rights in abeyance. An abeyance means suspended for legal reasons.
Also, if they designate you an enemy combatant under the Patriot Act and in the NDAA, then they can strip you. That means you don't have a right to trial by jury. You don't get a right to speedy trial. All your constitutional rights are stripped to you under the Patriot Act and subsequent legislation. Right. But they apply it selectively because that white boy, John Walker Lynn, was not treated like Hosea Padilla, who's a non-white person who they declared an enemy combatant and tortured him and all that. But the white boy who was caught on the battlefield, John Walker Lynn, they recognized all his constitutional rights, and he was given a lawyer, and he was able to plea bargain and given a prison sentence, and he might be out already. I'm not sure.
You're right, and that's exactly what I was trying to get to. What they've done is done the same thing that prosecutors and DAs have. They've left it to the discretion rather than an automatic use of it. So it's used selectively, just like you're saying. I'll mute myself.
Thank you for that addition, Brother Otis Van Scotty.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That's something we talk about on the cows so much. It's ridiculous, that term discretion, because when it comes to black people, that's where the discretion is applied towards the negative almost all the time. So, yeah, that's powerful, because the way that it is, the Constitution is being skirted, it's not in any sort of organized manner where the average citizen can figure out which laws have been obeyed versus which laws are still in play. We just have to let it happen as it happens. And like I said, for us, it always happens on the negative. Scotty just gave the example between Jose Padilla and the white person who was dubbed the enemy of the state. And their treatment was completely different. And that's kind of what even some of this discussion will be about as the night progresses, in regards to that, the application of the law and how it plays out versus what, you know, people have studied in regards to liberating your straw man and all of that, that's fine. But if, you know, if they choose to not apply it to you, they'll not apply it to you. And when it comes to you being a non-white person, that is pretty much the way the situation tends to go, more than not. So we're going to just move forward now into some of the other stuff here. So here we go. This, I think I want to get the other one. Give me one second. Yeah, I want to get the other one.
Brother Ross.
Uh-huh.
Can you start off with the 13-year-old boy who escaped the
sure.
the rape?
Okay.
Start there, please.
Okay, no problem. Let me pull that up right now. And actually, there's a thread that Otis and I were having a really great discussion in about this particular incident, and the article is also in there as well as in the Tando Radio Show thread. And then Otis also posted a really great Facebook Live video of the woman who found this young man as he was running for his life. So she basically tells a story, and the police get quite angry when she talks about the fact that racism still exists. And they basically say it doesn't exist, and they try to say that this little boy, they didn't believe what he was saying as she was there. And she started cursing, and she was really upset about the way that the police were treating the young man after he almost lost his life to some white supremacists. And we're going to get into this. These are the types of stories that we need to share with our children and just have those hard discussions around, so that that it's not lost on them the reality that they live in, and the fact that they are not children in the system. They are considered
Brother
an insurgent population. Yes?
Real quick, before we get into that, me and Brother Otis had a dialogue about this also. It's emotions. Anytime, no matter how angry you are, anytime mm-hmm. you are in a discussion with anyone, black mm-hmm. or white, you have to leave your emotions out of it, because it kind of dilutes your argument. So mm-hmm. we have to be able to be in control of our emotions every time, especially being melanated people, because we don't always get second chances. So with that being
absolutely
said, go
right.
ahead.
Dr. Wilson used to say that we need to approach it like a science. There's no emotion to science. It, you know, it is what it is. Once the results show themselves, if they're doing an experiment or whatever the case may be. And she always said that if you look at how white people approach white supremacy, it's with scientific methodology and focus, you know, not with emotion. And if it is emotion, the emotion is expressed in an overt act of white supremacy that more than likely they'll get away with, versus us, you know, the results of us being emotional, we usually get tased and shot. So yeah, we're going to go into this. It's a short article, but I saw the video, and it was quite quite profound, and just provides a lot of insight into the system of white supremacy, and make sure your children understand that this could be them, and that if when they tell the truth about something that happens to them, they will be doubted, like this young man was doubted. So yeah, we're going to get into it now. So it's entitled 13-year-old Houston boy escapes with no shoes, torn clothes after abduction by suspected white supremacists. And this is on AtlanticStar.com. Houston police are investigating after a 13-year-old boy was kidnapped from a bus stop Monday and was spotted running from his captors with ripped clothes and no shoes. The child's mother, Michelle Lee, says she called the police when her teen son, Xavion Parker, didn't come home from school. Parker was eventually found safe, but authorities said he likely suffered a, quote, very traumatic experience, unquote, local station KTRK reported. The sixth grader told police he was approached by five teenage boys, roughly 17 to 18 years old, shortly after he got off the school bus that afternoon. He said the boys forced him into a four-door vehicle with flames painted on the side and drove him to a vacant cabin where they assaulted him. They actually said that the adult held him down while the other ones basically beat the crap out of him. The sixth grader told police he was, the suspects, who were driven to the home by an unidentified white male, reportedly stole Parker's keys, phone, shoes, and jacket, according to the news station. When the group went into another room to load an alleged gun, the teen said he ran as fast as he could. That's when the witness, Camicia Carmouche, says she spotted the frightened boy running down the street shoeless as she was on her way home from work. Carmouche said she immediately contacted the police. Houston police officials described the suspected driver as a white male with muscular build and straight orange hair. Sounds like Donald Trump. Just kidding. Parker told police that the man also had a distinctive tattoo on his arm that read, "I hate black people," and that's in quotes. Lee said she believes her son was targeted because of his race, adding that she received threatening text messages from his phone, possibly from the suspect. Now, in the video that the woman who helped him and found him created, and actually at the end she gets permission from the victim's mother to post the video so that people can share it and make other black people aware of this, she said that where is it at? Oh, let me see if I can find it. Oh, she also said that the mother had actually gotten phone calls from the guy who had his phone, and they actually told his mother, "Your son is going to die today. He's not coming home," because they had his cell phone, and as he escaped, she was the one who saw him running unarmed. But she said that they actually called the mother and threatened, basically told her that she was not going to see her son again. And the police had even doubted the fact that the guy had a racist tattooed on his arm, and that was something that really angered the woman who had helped him, and she made that quite clear in the video. So really what this is about having the conversations with your children around the real world that we live in and helping them to become less confused about the situations they'll encounter whenever they encounter white supremacists in any situation, and what to expect, and basically not be surprised when white people practice racism. You know, that is, you know, that's something we talk about on the cows all the time. What does it mean to be white? When they understand that, you know, to be white means to understand the concept of genetic annihilation and to be functionally mentally ill as far as psychopathy, sociopathy, acute narcissism, and fear of genetic annihilation, that's what it means to be white. So in a situation where the circumstances are correct, you might go from having a white person be very pleasant to you to being a terrorist in seconds. And you have to understand that that's how they function with our ancestors. That's how they function with us today. It's just that some of us are more confused than others, and the ones who are more confused tend to be the ones that we see in the news, tend to be the ones that we see in wild police videos where they're getting shot at, you know, 40, 50 times or more. So with our children, once they understand that they're not going to be treated as children because we're prisoners of war, like, that's something you have to make clear to them, and not to scare them. You know, you let them know you're there for them as a parent, but let them understand that this is the type of treatment that we've gotten, this is the type of treatment we continue to get, and until this system is ended and replaced with a just system, you have to be aware of these potentialities, and I have to now school you on how to navigate situations that might arise with you, because not just the so-called police officer can kill you, but the average white citizen. You know, Gus talks about that too. You know, the fact that basically every white person is a deputy of the system of white supremacy. They can become officers of the law and call for backup. And you know, when a white person calls the police, they're gonna send the cavalry out. And the likelihood of you getting shot skyrockets with that situation right there. So, you know, we have to be honest with them, because and he just was waiting at the bus stop. And it's just you know, and the woman in the video who takes the video, she also talked about I think it was Baton Rouge, she said, because her video was up on the 15th of May, so that was just 3 days ago. And she said in Baton Rouge just a few days earlier that two black men were found hanging from a tree in Louisiana, and it was a Craigslist deal that went bad. So they were lured to this place, I guess, by white people via a Craigslist ad for something they wanted to buy, and instead it was a lynch party. Now, that's not the first time people have been killed. Black, you know, women have been raped using Craigslist. So, I mean, it's even to the point where certain states have designated places that are known as safe zones for people who set up different deals on Craigslist where they can safely exchange money for goods without the possibility of someone getting killed. And that was a few years ago. I remember seeing a short news clip about that on my local news, that they started setting up these safe zones in certain states and in certain areas where if you are doing Craigslist transactions, you go to that place. They usually have an officer or officers on the scene, and you can do your exchange in safety and go about your business because of those types of incidences. So, you know, and she wanted to make it clear in her video that these things are happening. Nothing has changed. And that's the thing. Like, we talk like things have changed. You know, we function like, you know, like I remember Minister Malcolm in the video where he talks about what he says, you know, that we are Aboriginals, and he talks about the fact, he said, you know, you don't want to be Aboriginal, you want to be American. And when he says American, he's talking about like white folks, you know, and a lot of us think that we have the same rights as white people, and we're going to be treated and should be treated like white people. You know, not saying that they're incorrect in that, we should all be treated the same as far as being, you know, equitably treated, but that's not the system that we live in. And it's that mentality, it's that paradigm that puts you in the most potentially tragic situation, because you're not functioning with the realistic understanding of the world that you live in. And white people, like Gus always says, white people will show you better than I can tell you when you don't understand the system. Yes, sir.
You are exactly correct, man. And just a recent, not too long ago, I just ran into a group of brothers, high schoolers, you know, probably seniors and juniors, and just doing what children do, you know. And with the stuff that's going on in the world today, you don't even have to watch the news to see these things. You could just be on Facebook, which many of them are, and see how we get treated, you know. And I just I was in the store getting me some of my well, I ain't even gonna say that. I was buying some beer. That's what I was doing. I was buying some beer, and like these, it was like, I guess it was 6 to 8 of these young brothers, and it was a young lady that they was in there all congregating around. And they were just loud and obnoxious by my standards. And I get loud myself. So if I'm saying they loud, then they was pretty loud, right? And I was like, yo, you know, you got customers around here, and y'all see what's going on in the news today. Y'all know what they doing to us. Why would y'all even put yourselves in that particular predicament? And nobody had an answer. Nobody had an answer. Now, these are 16, 17, 18-year-old children. They can handle themselves pretty good as far as their vernacular, but they didn't have no answer for the question that I gave them. I didn't say anything smart. I wasn't forceful with my question. You know, I was just asking them, why would they put themselves in that predicament? And as soon as I finished asking them that question, nobody had nothing to say. Just quiet as all outdoors. You know, and that is the exact same thing. We all want to be treated in the same manner, but we know that's not the reality. So if we know that's not the reality, why do we still continue to operate in the same manner? And like you said, we will get further into that conversation as the night goes on. But that just reminded me of that particular situation, because as afraid of what I may have to do or what may happen to me on a daily basis when I run into these brothers, what you was just saying just exploded in my head. Because a simple conversation that's too loud for some white person who's walking in on it could turn into a deadly situation. And I don't think that a lot of us are not teaching our children about that. And it's not about being scared. It's more about being realistic. Because the fact is that no matter what you say or how you think you can handle yourself, if you have 10 SWAT police is popping up on you and you don't have a group of people to handle arms alongside of you, then you're a goner. You know, you done for. And that's just the truth of the matter. And if I'm wrong in my assessment, by all means, somebody please correct me.
I wouldn't say that you're wrong, but I would say having other folks who are armed with you ain't gonna matter. Because there are 1 million slave catchers estimated in this country. That's not even mentioning National Guard and then the U.S. military. I'm thinking about David Koresh. and they were all armed, and they were in a fort, basically, and we see they burnt that fort down and killed everybody inside. I also think about Move 9 in Philadelphia. They were all armed and inside the house, and the FBI dropped C4 explosive on their house, and darn near killed everybody inside. It was only two survivors, and burnt down the whole damn neighborhood in the process. So behind these enemy lines, we had to recognize that we are at a severe disadvantage, and we had to be very strategic in how we operate.
Hey, that brother Scotty, it's crazy because I told Ross to stay on subject, and I'm the one that's taking us off. But I got a question for you based off of that off of your comment, brother Scotty.
Yes.
Now, when we're operating in this manner, like you said, it doesn't matter if we're armed because they have so much more arms than us. You know, they have way more guns, explosives, and all of that stuff than we do. When is it a good time to go on the offense? Because that's the one thing throughout all of my studies in history is that us in this particular continent haven't done. Now, for those of you who are thinking about all of the rebellions and what have you, that is a reaction. That's what that was. That's what a rebellion is. It's a reaction to something that happened already. I'm talking about going on an offensive. Do you see that happening at any time soon?
No,
soon, I mean like in the next 100 years.
No, I do not. Unless the victims change their behavior. Now, I would say that the Black Panther Party had the beginnings of that.
Thing?
And even before them, the Deacons for Defense and these paramilitary groups that blacks had started. But if they had been allowed to survive, and this is why J. Edgar Hoover called them the greatest threat to the security of the United States. Now, I know he said because they were feeding children and be able to win the hearts and the minds of the people, but at the same time, that they were a lot of ex-military. If they weren't ex-military, they were being trained by ex-military with military combat tactics and whatnot. And this was a national organization that had national chapters, and they would have only grown, in my opinion, and then we would have been in a position with allies, and I'm going to stress, with allies to overthrow the system of slavery.
I agree with you, and really, it would take a critical mass. It reminds me of the movie The Spook Who Sat by the Door. And the fact that movie didn't stay in the theaters that long. I know somebody who was in Detroit at the time it was released, and he said it only stayed in his city for like 2 days, and they got it up out of there. And the interesting part about it is the way that the main character was able to teach different gang members and eventually send those gang members all across the country to different cities to then embed themselves in the gangs in these other, you know, black dominated cities as far as the numbers, so that they could start a simultaneous sleeper cell attack on the institution
That's a great movie to cite that applies to his question.
Absolutely. What it was that all of those gang members were on one accord as to what the problem was and what needed to be done. There was nobody talking about, you know, I'm black and, you know, I don't like you because you Hebrew Israelite or you indigenous. It was none of that. It was what's the problem and how can we solve the problem? We all understand what the problem is. We all have the means now to try and facilitate spreading this understanding to other people so that we have a cross understanding on a national level in all of the places where black numbers dominate, and we're not taking this anymore. It's time to make moves. So it's really, and like Scotty said, it's the best movie. The book is just as good. I would say even better. And it's a powerful statement to what getting people on one accord is about. And
when you go also, back to the, Ross,
go ahead.
Also, I would also say that we had to change our behavior. But, okay, I know what it was. We actually don't need critical mass. No revolution had critical mass. It had just 5% of the total population. This is what I learned from elders who were in the Black Panther Party, one of them a political prisoner. And, you know, they study revolution, and it was never a majority of the people. Okay, they might have had the majority of the people's support, meaning that, hey, we might help you hide out, or we might give you some food, or what have you, and we support what you're doing. But most people were not actively engaged as soldiers in these revolutions. Now, right. We will have to be, to go back to Brother Jenna's question, though, in 100 years, that means we will have to not only be training and making allies outside of North America who that, hey, when things pop off, y'all gonna come support us, right? And what have you. But we will also have to be stockpiling supplies right now. You feel what I'm saying?
Yep.
Now, the quickest way that I see, and I'm just speaking hypothetically, if we're only talking about melanated people, we're only talking about black people, the quickest way is for us to all to follow the follow part of the plan of the Republic of New Africa, which his first president was Robert F. Williams. We will have to migrate to certain states to where we become the numerical majority. We would then take over all people activity areas because we got the numbers and you know, but most importantly, taking over the National Guard, which has military equipment. Some of them even have fighter jets and what have you. So to me, that would be the quickest way, is to basically follow the motto of the Confederate States of America, even though they lost and their cause wasn't just. It will be for us to become the numerical majority, take over the internal workings of these states, and then we could band with those states and then declare our independence. And in hell, if y'all want to fight it out, let's fight it out. Does that make sense?
Makes absolute
yes, sir.
Sense.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yes. I think you dropped off. We got you back.
Yeah. I had some. Thanks, I'm out of transit, though.
Okay.
Yes, sir. That's why I asked the question. And if anybody in the, if anybody that's listening, you know, if you have a comment or a question, you know, y'all can give us a call.
I'd like
the
to.
The number is.
Oh, go ahead, Brother Otis.
Okay, hold on just a second, Brother Otis. Let me just get his number out real quick because I know we're finna go into break. If you have a question or comment, by all means, give us a call. That number is 704-802-5056. That number again is 704-802-5056. Press ** to put yourself in the queue, and we'll get with you as soon as possible. Brother Otis, go ahead, by all means.
Yeah, good evening. I'd like to interject one thing about this. The strongest weapon we have is our minds, and I want to give a quick example.
Mm-hmm.
When you're fighting white supremacy, you talk about Cress Wesley and quite a few other of our noted elders that have gone on. They've already told us what the purpose of white supremacy is and how it protects itself by deflecting and always saying it's not about race. Now, I had to learn this and teach my son, and it's worked fine for me in court and in real world situations, like when police have come to my property. The first thing is, you know it's race, they know it's race. You cannot have an argument with them based on race. And I'm going to say it this way. When you counter the law, you stick to the transgression. What have you been wronged on?
Hold on, Brother Otis. Brother Otis, can you give a little more detail in why you say that? And I know what you mean, but the listeners may not.
I'm going to try to give it in about 2 minutes if I can. Because you have been transgressed upon. You have been wrong. When you switch it to race, you give the offender a way out. And we know what that dialogue will lead to. A bunch of deflection and no, that's not it. For instance, my son got into a situation in school one time. He got into a fight. They got zero tolerance. I go up because I'm a helicopter parent. I'm familiar with them, and I see things and try to tell him in advance how to stay out of them. But what ends up happening is he comes home and supposedly suspended from school for 3 days for fighting. So I know my son. I go up to the school to talk to them. The first thing that the SRO, the school resource officer, tells me is, "You're calling me prejudice. You're calling me race." I said, "Hold on, young man. I have never raised race in this whole thing. I'm telling you that you and I don't have to debate. Show me the footage. I know this place has cameras in it. I used to install these. Show me the footage." The first thing he told me is he couldn't do that. I said, "Well, we're not talking anymore then. If you cannot stay on the subject of what the transgression is, I no longer want to talk to you." Long story short, they make a call to the superintendent's office. They authorize him and tell him that his son is a minor, so you do have a right to give the parent the footage. So he brings me in, shows me the footage. So I say to him, "Look at the report you wrote up. You wrote up that my son engaged this guy and got up and moved toward him. The first thing I see on the footage is my son is seated when he gets assaulted. Well, he was about to get up." No, no, no. Number one, your report is wrong. Let's stay to the facts. I have nothing to do with what's in your mind and why you wrote what you wrote. What I'm telling you is what you wrote is not an accurate depiction of what happened on this film. So now he's got the superintendent, the principals, and all of them sitting around. They're all white. They're looking at it, and I'm asking them, "Is this an accurate description? Look at the words and look at what you see on the screen." "No, sir, it's not." So we go through all of that. Long story short, after about 45 minutes, I make them retract the whole written part from the officer. And then at the end, when they asked me to write up what happened, that's when I charged him with racism, because I explained to him, "Once you did these transgressions, now I have reason to believe you are a racist, because anybody in their right mind could tell that the footage does not match what you wrote." And that's what I keep teaching my son in any encounter with white people. Do not try to argue with them about whether or not it's race, because race is an argument we've been losing for 500 years. Now, what the reason I'm saying this is, in every encounter, you have to do that, because if you don't, what ends up happening is just like that lady in that footage. When she got so upset that she brought the issue to all about race, nothing is said about the fact that these white people terrorized a young black man.
Exactly.
She drove it completely away from what was wrong. A kidnapping in broad daylight, terrorizing, and the physical harm they did him. So that's the part that we have to look at as a people. Do not engage white folks on the terms that they want to be engaged on. I am an American citizen. I have the very same rights. Let's talk about these rights and what you did wrong. Once we get that documented, now we can talk about what led you to it. And I do have my suspicions. And now, we have to fight the battle that way.
I agree with you. Go ahead.
I want to say one other thing, then I'm going to mute my mic so you can get it. And that's why I agree with Scotty. I've even tried to say it repeatedly. We're talking about Jared Ball. I've had a couple conversations with him on some platforms. Even when Scotty was talking about moving to these other states, that's why we don't need to be so vocal about moving. Just do it. In our private, offline conversations, do what we need to do. If we do that in mass in 3 to 4 years, we will have done it covertly. We will have already aligned ourselves so that voting is no longer a question. We can already have been putting people in place in lower government. So once you do what you're going to do and vote in things, now you command everything. But you'll never do it by keep on bringing up the racial part of it, because that is what the white man is prepared to defend. The other parts is what he loses at.
You said something, and Scotty actually put this in BTR community, and I was thinking in the chat room, and I was thinking the same thing. He said, Neely Fuller says to avoid using the word racism and making accusations based on race. He said, stick to the law or on the job, the employee handbook, and ask questions. Absolutely correct. One thing he makes emphatically clear is when you charge a white person with racism, the onus is on you to prove that they're racist. And if other powerful white people don't come and stand behind what you said, then what you said means absolutely nothing. And that is pretty much what it is. And I think what you said, Otis, was really, really powerful, and especially if you were able to show that to your son. Let's stick with what the issue is, and we can deal with the motive behind your behavior later. Let's establish the fact that you're wrong. Let's establish the fact my son should not have been suspended because your entire interpretation of what you saw is completely different than what actually happened in the video, and there's a problem with that. And it's funny. Go ahead.
I'll give you a quick example. I even went to court over a person attacking me. So I go up and I swear out my complaint to the magistrate. So the magistrate tells me that that's just a misdemeanor. So I told him, I said, no, sir, how are you going to tell me it's a misdemeanor? I cited the law and everything. He tells me, well, that's just my interpretation, and I'm the magistrate. So he told me to sign the form. Where I signed the form, I put it on there, I do not agree with his assessment. I retain my right to speak to the judge about this. I went to court 2 months later when the district attorney tried to do her opening statement on the case. I told the judge, could you please look at the form, knowing that they couldn't throw that form away. He reads the form and he says, Mr. Griffin, why do you say that? I said, do you see what I cited in the law? He got his clerk to pull up the law. He reread it. And you know what he told the DA? I suggest you either move for dismissal based on the evidence that Mr. Griffin just presented or request a delay. And he says, if you request a delay, then I'm going to have to see that Mr. Griffin gets some kind of restitution. They threw it out of court. And charged the guy with a felony for putting a knife to my throat. I was on a job minding my own business, and the dude put a knife to my throat. And he had a lawyer there and everything, and the lawyer told me, you can't do that, you can't do that. He's practicing law. And the judge said, no, he cited the law. He's not practicing law. So back to my same point. I had no idea why the hunky did it. I knew why he did it, because I had said some things to him in response to what he'd done to me. But the point is, I had to stick to the law to get what I needed out of him, because he would have walked away with that.
Okay, brother Otis, we got to go to this break. You're listening to Tando Radio with your guest host, Brother Roz, and myself, Jenna Kefra. We'll be back with you in just a few seconds.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Not a Wu-Tanga. Man, I love that. I don't know why I like that so much. Yo, welcome back to Tando Radio with your guest host, myself, Jenna, and also my brother, Roz. Sorry about that. I'm having a little static coming through. In tonight's show, we're going to get into it at the top of this hour. Would you like to start off with the article? We already read the one about the young boy
mm-hmm.
that escaped from these races. Would you like to read one of the other ones before we get into this? Did you put the clip in the
the clip is in the chat room already. Yeah.
Okay, because that's we're gonna get to that at the end. What we're trying to do is to let you know that, because I myself said that I believe, and this is my belief, that the Constitution has been suspended. We've seen so many different things to show that it has. A few things was pointed out, Brother Scotty, Brother Otis, and those were interesting to me that I'm going to look into myself, to where they're just only citing certain things. But when they begin doing that, that also puts me in the mind of it being suspended, because it's not that they're it is that they're separating. We're gonna do this for these people and we're gonna do this for these people. And that's one of the reasons why I believe that it's been separated from our country. There's a few more things. These are just hearsay, so I will not even mention those. But ever since Barack Obama went to the UN, is it real staticky, Roz, my speech?
Not the speech. It just sounds like something's hitting your microphone or something like that. Now it stopped.
Yeah, because I don't know what that is.
It's fine now. Now
but this is clear. This is another one of those things to where I just be getting messed with. But we have a few more articles that kind of chain gang this whole conversation. You want to go into that next one, Brother Roz?
Yes, I wanted to get into this one from the Activist Post, because it also ties into what we see happening on a daily basis as well, and I think it's going to escalate due to this particular situation. This is from the Activist Post, and it's entitled "Supreme Court Rules Cops Can Kill Non-Threatening People As Long As They Say They Were Scared." In a ruling that will be used to reinforce a disturbing pattern practiced by police officers across the United States, the Supreme Court has determined that officers who shoot non-threatening citizens are completely justified and cannot face consequences for their actions as long as they express to the court that they fear for their safety. In the case of Casella versus...
Hold on, wait. Okay. Can you please repeat that two more times, not just once, two more times? Can you please repeat that last part more times?
Okay. The Supreme Court has determined that officers who shoot non-threatening citizens are completely justified and cannot face consequences for their actions as long as they express to the court that they feared for their safety. I think it does warrant a second reading.
Hold on, Roz. One more time.
As long as they express to the court that they feared for their safety. It kind of sounds like a stand your ground law for police. Like I told you off the air, you know, it's just, okay, as long as I fear for my safety, I can gun you down and it's all good. I can ask questions after I shoot you. And let me continue, because this is interesting. So the case of Casella versus Hughes originated from a police shooting in Tucson, Arizona in 2010. Police Corporal Andrew Casella heard a report over police radio about a woman using a kitchen knife to hack a tree and acting erratically in public. He responded to the scene with two other officers. On the other side of a chain link fence, the officers saw Sharon Chadwick standing next to her car. Her roommate, Amy Hughes, emerged from the house with a kitchen knife held at her side. Despite the fact that the two women were standing at least 6 feet apart, the blade of the knife was facing away from Chadwick, and Hughes did not appear to be threatening her roommate in any way. All three officers approached the fence with their guns drawn. Less than 60 seconds after Casella saw Chadwick, he opened fire and shot Hughes four times through the fence. After she fell to the ground, officers jumped over the fence, approached Hughes, and placed her in handcuffs, then called the paramedics. It took just seconds for Officer Casella to choose to shoot Hughes multiple times, even though she had not broken any laws and she did not appear to be threatening anyone. Miraculously, Hughes did not die from the gunshot wound she sustained, and Chadwick was not injured during the reckless attack. Hughes filed a lawsuit against Casella based on the claim that her civil rights were violated during the shooting. While a federal district judge ruled in favor of Casella, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals reversed the decision and argued that Hughes' Fourth Amendment rights were clearly violated. The Supreme Court has now reversed the Ninth Circuit Court's decision, and in its opinion on the case, the court argued that there should not be a debate over whether Hughes' Fourth Amendment rights were violated, because Casella should automatically be afforded, quote, qualified immunity, unquote, as a police officer. The court need not and does not decide whether Casella violated the Fourth Amendment when he used deadly force against Hughes. For even assuming a Fourth Amendment violation occurred, a proposition that is not at all evident, on these facts, Casella was at least entitled to qualified immunity. Qualified immunity attaches when an official's conduct does not violate clearly established statutory or constitutional rights of which a reasonable person would have known, because the focus is on whether the officer had fair notice that her conduct was unlawful. Reasonableness is judged against the backdrop of the law at the time of the conduct. As SCOTUS blog noted, even if the Supreme Court judge believed that Casella was guilty of violating Hughes' Fourth Amendment rights, quote, Casella still could not be sued because any rights that he might have violated were not clearly established, a key factor in whether government officials enjoy immunity from lawsuits, unquote. I'll stop there. But that is something to really think about.
Now, does that sound like they've been reading Neely Fuller's compensatory book?
If it's not that, because I tell you this much, as you know, black vernacular has become so widespread that you got local news people talking about stay woke, and you got white supremacists talking about stay woke. It wouldn't surprise me that they read all of these books. I mean, even Gus has talked about on his show that some of the most important books on racism that he's come in contact with have been told to him to read by white people. He said Medical Apartheid by Dr. Harriet Washington was given to him by a white guest who said he needs to read that book. Go ahead.
On another note to the story you just read, because I remember that case, I think it's important to point out, though, and like y'all said or hinted at in the description, that this country is moving towards more and more towards fascism. It's always been fascist for non-white people, but, you know, because I believe that woman was white. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to slave catchers, now the Supreme Court, we had to realize when people start talking about who gets to appoint Supreme, you know, Court justices, which is a lifetime in, appointment, why there's so much energy and money and emphasis put on that. Now, as you read in that story, the Ninth Circuit said that her rights were violated. But then it went to the Supreme Court, where you have, I think, a majority of conservatives, although one of them was appointed by Barack Obama, who is a moderate. To me, you know, I'm like Martin Luther King. That's the biggest threat, is people who are moderate. You know what I'm saying? We know the extremists. It's those people that claim that they moderate but, you know, secretly they siding, in this case publicly, siding with the conservatives. So that was a conservative majority that interpreted the law to give slave catchers qualified immunity. So this is why, you know, this is a common thread. Again, we are dealing with a system with two wings, same bird, but there are subtle differences. And so, you know, what you had was a conservative court, Supreme Court, saying that slave catchers can basically have, I think I'm using the term correctly, carte blanche, where they can just do whatever the hell they want to do.
Yeah, pretty much, because did somebody chime in? Just
now, Jenny. No,
that was Jenna.
My computer updating. My apologies. I'm going to mute it.
Oh, no problem. I just thought it was somebody else. I'm not looking at the board right now. We're just trying to find the piece that I was reading from. Let me see. You know what? I'm just going to open it again because I know I can. Where are you? Because there was a section in it that was right beneath where I stopped that I think kind of puts everything in proper perspective in short order. Where is it at? Okay, here we go. Yeah,
and so while you're looking for that, though, this doctrine, what they're ruling on, and I don't know if people pay attention, this is why I say politics is one of the most important areas of people's activity, because it regulates every other activity. But many of these states have been passing what they call so-called police bill of rights, which again gives them qualified immunity at the state level. And so these are laws that are in effect. But at the same time, again, if we became the majority in the state and participated,
we could change.
We could change the law. We could repeal the law.
Hey, but look, check this out, Scotty. Check this out. Nobody really paid attention. I think me, you, and Brother Dave have brought this up because you were still doing BTR News, and I know I called in and talked to you about this, but when they passed the law saying that if you touch a police officer, that's assault. What that does is that mitigates the law, the right that we have to resist an unlawful arrest.
Right, right.
Nobody's pointing these things out, and that's why I was saying it's because as far as the Constitution being suspended, because what they're doing is they're not making laws, they're making amendments, which we still have to follow, but they're making amendments that goes against the Constitution. None of the quote-unquote representatives are speaking up against this, and that's what leads me to believe that with all of the also quote-unquote the delegation of the laws to be moved around, which is against the Constitution, that's what leads me to believe that it's been suspended. Because they would have some repercussions at some point in time from somebody, like I said earlier, somebody normally steps up, whether it's a black man, black woman, white man, white woman. Somebody normally steps up to regulate these things.
Well, Jenna,
nobody has.
Jenna, you know I said on Dave's show, he was talking about the system and whatnot, and I had mentioned that, I mean, since the beginning of civilization, there's always been a system in place so that people can trade with each other, you know, just engaging so that there are some standards in terms of people activity. All right. Gotta so there's always been a system. It's not the system itself that's evil. It's the people running the system.
It's the people. It's the people. And you are correct. And what's going on right now is that, and that's one of the reasons to why I don't do it every time I speak, but quite often I bring up the fact that a lot of us don't know the difference between a republic and a democracy. Because we're operating up under one ideology when we're living up under another. But before I get too deep into that, Brother Ross, I know you want to say something. Plus, we got to get on through some of these articles so we can round this out before the night ends.
Yeah, definitely. I was just going to say that, that you know, I think Brother Otis rounded it out with saying that the Constitution was obeyed in the sense where they would selectively use discernment as to which aspects of the Constitution they would use and which they don't. Now, knowing that the system is built on warfare via confusion and deception, then they're just picking them as we go. Now, what you said in reference to the amendments that were being made, what happens is people don't pay attention to them because they don't have context. It just sounds like something written on a piece of paper that's a law document, and they're like, okay, fine. When they get context is in real-world situations, like what we described in, you know, what I read. Once the real world situation happens where that law is no longer just something that you hear being read off a piece of paper, but it's a living, breathing thing that now can alter the destiny of someone's life, then it's a whole different thing. And that's where I think the disconnect is. Now, just to get to what I was saying to kind of round this out before we move on, it says this: even though Chadwick testified that she did not feel threatened by Hughes or the knife in her hand at the time of the shooting, the Supreme Court has chosen to side with the police officer who chose to open fire within seconds before taking the time to accurately assess the situation. By supporting Casella's actions, the Supreme Court has essentially given all police officers a blank check which says that if they see a person standing in the distance on her property and she appears to be holding a weapon in her hand, the officer has a right to open fire and shoot her multiple times as long as the officer maintains that he feared for his safety, even if he cannot prove that the person he targeted was threatening him. That says it right there. So that should really give people context and pause for thought, because these things will have real world consequences, especially as this situation with you know, the orchestration of Trump's behavior on the international stage, the theater of war, taking off.
So you know what normally happened?
What's that?
And I'm sorry for interjecting, but I want to just because I'm not sure, brother or sister, OLG. Let me just read this, what they, because they having a ball over here to come in. No, it's not.
But, I thought OLG was him. Okay.
The Protect and Serve Act of 2018 sailed out of Congressional House on Wednesday. The act would allow for federal prosecution for those who assault and cause injury to law enforcement officers, advertising. More than 380 representatives voted yes. 35 voted no. Appreciate you for that information. And that goes to the point that it's okay to take us out. Because as we know, every now and again we have a situation like this, to why this act was even passed, to where a white person doing it. But more times than not, it's always us that's taking this blunt. And you can be the most intelligent person in the world and right up under what you believe to be the right way to identify yourself and catch all of these copper shells. With that being said, Brother Raj, you want to continue on to the rest of it? Because we're getting ready to go to a break. So
Yes. The next one was... Where's that? Oh, okay. So this one was one that Brother Otis had posted that I thought was quite powerful, even though it's sad as well. But it just speaks to when a child is less confused, what that can look like. So this is from CBSLocal.com. It says, "I've been hit, chased, and thrown down and called the N-word. 12-year-old speaks out against racism and bullying. A 12-year-old Rockland boy is speaking out on the issues of bullying and racism at his elementary school. Daniel Pocklington addressed the Rockland School Board Wednesday after his family says a number of incidents were not handled appropriately. Quote, I want there to be a policy where there's no hate speech and bullying at Rockland schools. It's not fair, unquote, he said. Daniel bravely took the podium Wednesday night begging the school board to listen. Quote, I'm here to talk about what it's like to be an African-American boy in your school. I've been hit, chased, thrown down, and called the N-word several times this year, unquote. Quote, it's hard for me to find a safe way to go to school and actually feel important. Listen to what he said, and actually feel important. It keeps happening, and I don't feel safe, or that it will get better, unquote, he said. Daniel was adopted at birth, and now at 12, he's a fifth grader at Rock Creek Elementary. His family says he gets good grades, is a part of student council, and on the school's cross-country track team, but his school life has been tough. Quote, someone just left a note on my desk again with the N-word, and it makes me think, why does this keep happening to me? Like, what have I done to people to make them do this to me, unquote, said Daniel. He says on a number of occasions he's been bullied, thrown down, kicked, and called racial slurs. Quote, it felt really bad. It felt like you got shot right through the heart. It felt like you didn't mean anything in the world, unquote, he said. He said, this is what life's going to be for me, Mom, and I can't accept that. I can't accept that, said Daniel's mother, Adrian Pocklington. Pocklington said she's tried to speak with the district and the school's principal. Quote, he said he was handling it, and they were doing one day in school suspension, and I said, it's not enough. That's not teaching my child that he matters and that the school isn't going to tolerate it, unquote, she said. Daniel says he's speaking up because it hurts more to hold it in, and he knows that there are other students feeling the same way but too afraid to speak up. Quote, I feel like my friends deserve a better way to go to school and feel safe, unquote, he said. I'll stop there. But that's really what his experience put him in a state of mind. And when he said that he doesn't feel important, it reminds me of something Dr. Joy DeGruy talked about in post-traumatic slave syndrome, both her DVD documentary, and she talked about it in the text itself. And she talked about the fact, she said that when she went to Ghana on a trip, that what she saw locally, she was just analyzing the population as she was going through, you know, the area that she was staying in. And she said one thing that she saw that was consistent was where they had a term upon meeting each other where they say, "I see you." And she said the term when they say, "I see you," doesn't mean the physical act of seeing a person, but it's a way in the local vernacular of saying, "I see my reflection in you, your humanity." So there's a different way of thinking just in greeting another human being over there that she said doesn't exist here. And she talked about the fact that she talked about the origin of black-on-black violence in this country being us following the dueling culture of whites. And she used a book that I've talked about before. We'll probably end up reading it eventually on the book study club, but it's called All God's Children by Fox Butterfield. And it follows the life of the first child in the United States to be charged as an adult. And that happened in New York City. His name was Willie Bosket, and they found that his family violence dated back to South Carolina with generations back black male elders of his, and it went back to this dueling culture where black people saw white people dueling with each other for respect, and they started to practice the same behavior, even to the point where his relatives were based in South Carolina. There were incidences of black people killing white people for disrespecting them. And she said that the fact that we're not trained to see each other as living, breathing beings that deserve the respect of life like everything else, and the fact that we don't see each other, we're taught that we're not worth anything. So when he said that he doesn't feel important, it's all of that understanding in a 12-year-old, and that can do a lot to the psyche of a young child. In regards to how they view themselves, whether they get depressed, whether they get suicidal, all of those things come from that. And it's a shame that he has to understand in the system that it's not going to stop. He's going to be harassed, but no one's giving him a reprieve as far as helping him mitigate those circumstances so that he could just get his education.
Hey, Ross, let me ask you this question. In terms of black people's interactions and dueling mm-hmm. with each other, what role do you think gangster rap, and that might be a dated term, but we know mm-hmm. gangster rap is supported by non-black corporations, and you know they just right. recruit black people and reward them for these anti-black mm-hmm. messages. How big of a deal do you think that plays into that programming of non-white people, particularly black people?
I can tell you because that's my background is the music business, as far as emceeing and producing and being a part of a group and making music and doing all kinds of things with that. And I can say that is a very important aspect of that, because it's being perpetuated sonically in a way that is entrancing for the mind, using drum patterns and rhythmic speech in the form of rhyme. So when you think about it, and somebody, and that's the whole thing, when you listen to how gangster rap is formulated as far as what they're speaking about when it comes to respect is always held at the end of the barrel of a gun. So the whole idea is anything you do to me warrants me shooting you. And in the most, you know, disagreeable, heinous acts, they'll describe, you know, pistol whipping you in front of your children, tying you up in front of your wife, all kinds of craziness. And it's really just the extreme propagation of the same psychology that Willie Bosket's relatives and others that lived in that situation where they saw white people doing that type of stuff every day. And they said, well, if they could do it, then we could do it too. And eventually it just applied to us. And because we understood that we are already victims in the system, we're prisoners of war, intergenerational prisoners of war. So our lives are worth a lot less because we, no matter how peaceful things seem, no matter how accomplished you might be in whatever field of, you know, that you choose to work in or whatever, you are still a prisoner of war and you are considered an insurgent population. So what happens is we understand even more acutely than white people that our lives are worth less. So it's easier for us to do things to each other because it's assumed that we have a much greater chance of getting away with it because we are worth less, versus when something happens to a white person in less than 24 hours, the crime is solved already. You know, so it's definitely, I think gangster rap is really a big thing because it's global. I mean, it's global to the point where I've seen a clip, recently on a show called Divas and Mero, and it had The Game from the West Coast. He's a known Bloods associated rapper, Bloods Gang associated rapper, and he was in Germany, if I remember correctly, in the clip, and he was having a beef with this so-called Latino gangster rapper named Tekashi 6ix9ine from New York City, and he was calling him a fake Blood in Germany. But everybody in the crowd, I think it was like a 50 or 70,000 crowd amphitheater, was white. And they're all screaming fake, you know, fake so-and-so Blood, fake so-and-so Blood, chanting behind him. So that Blood mentality is global. You have Bloods in different countries. And on the continent, you have Bloods up in Toronto that I know have committed all kinds of murders in Toronto, because I have relatives from up there who talk about that. So, I mean, it's not a game. So I think you're absolutely correct. It's the greatest advertisement for anti-blackness in the world. Yes, everybody wants to join, you know, be a part of hip-hop and get the accolades that come with it. But the reality
is what they're spitting out, though.
Well, the thing is, it's the biggest purveyor of anti-blackness and white supremacy with a black face on it in the history of music. It's black people. I remember Chuck D talking about doing a concert again in Germany, and 50 Cent was on the bill, and 50 was saying the N-word every other word, and they knew the words. And he said to hear, you know, 50,000 German people saying nigger for, like, you know, like a half hour set, he said, was just mind-blowing, because he stood backstage, he said, and he just watched this sea of people. And I'm like, does 50 even understand? He said that he was thinking, does 50 even understand what that looks like as an outsider watching him perform to this sea of white people saying this stuff? It's deep. But go ahead, what are you going to say, Jenna? I'm sorry.
Yeah, but this sent us right into the break. You are listening to Tando Radio, with your guest hosts, Jenna and Roz. We'll be back right with you in just a few.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Brother Roz. Yes, what?
All right, so we get into the meat of the discussion.
We're sending it right now to the video. We're gonna go right on
into
it.
I'm gonna post it again because it's so far back in the chat. I don't want Scotty to actually even go through that.
I did it. I just done it.
Oh, okay, perfect.
You see it, Brother Scotty?
I think so. If it's the last thing you posted, I'm pulling it up now. News video
it's
clip.
It's up under my name right here. It's at the bottom.
Okay, I got it. Okay, this is an 18-minute clip. How much do you want me to play?
Now, before he starts it, I just wanted to kind of give a little context to it so the listeners understand. So basically, it's from freethoughtproject.com. U.S. Marine Corps vet pulled from car and mauled by a canine over stop for missing front license plate. So this is a former veteran who's pulled over by the police in Canton, Ohio. And basically, he uses the UCC code and coded jargon. Like, you could tell that he was doctoring the words he was using to make sure he was in concert with things that most people are taught when they're freeing their straw man and dealing with the law. And you watch it go from 0 to 60 in not too much time. And it's really interesting because he's white. The young sister with the son, who was also shot with her, she was on her sovereign citizen ground as well, and she ended up getting killed. And that's what happens to us. But what happens to them is they get mauled by canines and assaulted pretty much. But the bottom line is that he basically knew his stuff according to what he was doing. He knew that the cops pulled him over for a misdemeanor statute, if I remember, that's the term he used, and the cop confirmed it, but he still said, I need you to get out the car and I need you to identify yourself. And he went through the spiel that I've heard some other people talk about and almost lost his life for it. So the video basically is
the video's 19 minutes long. How much of that?
Yeah, we only need about, like, maybe I think like maybe 14 of it. I was going to tell you that we don't need to watch the whole thing.
Okay.
Because it's really up to the part when they stick the dog on him, because that's when everything you hear him go from calm and I'm standing for my right to squealing like a dying baby piglet. So go ahead, if you have it, Scott. But yeah, maybe about 14 minutes of it should be enough. But I just want people to hear the exchange so you can hear him using the UCC code in his car and what he says to the police and, you know, all of that so people can get the context.
Go ahead. Allowed to provide me with an ID or anything like that so I can know who I'm talking to?
Officer, I'm not required by law to carry an ID.
Can you
unless,
tell me about the law?
Unless,
maybe I'm not unaware of it. Can you let me know?
You have to say that I've committed a crime.
No front plate.
That's not a crime. That's a statute.
That is a ORC code.
Yes,
you
that's
have
an.
You have a front plate displayed on your vehicle. I can't see what car. I can't see the front plate. You don't have it, right? You don't got it in the window. You don't have it. I don't know. I don't know what the front plate is. Okay.
I understand, but that's an ORC code. That's a statute.
That's law as well.
That's the color of law for those excited. That don't consent. I'm driving in my private capacity.
I tried to
trooper.
Be nice, but now we're just going to wait. And if
well, that's fine.
If you don't want to do what I asked you to do,
I just don't consent. I'm driving in my private capacity. That's all I'm doing, trooper. May I get your name and badge number, please?
Go ahead.
I get your name and badge number, trooper? Am I please get your name and badge number, trooper?
CPD, from up.
Okay.
I believe it says Humphreys, badge number 441. Is that correct, trooper? I'm not trying to make your day hard. I'm just trying to travel and be on my way. And not be infringed upon as I'm trying to get from point A to point B. That's all I'm doing. I'm not, back in my car says not for hire, non-commercial. I'm not driving in a commercial capacity. I'm not required to have a driver's license at the moment. I'm in my automobile, which is my private property. It's posted on my window. I got a little thing back there in case anyone pulls me over. It says private property, no trespassing. And I'm just driving, or not driving, I'm just traveling point A to point B in my private capacity. I'm not driving any commercial capacity right now. All right, everyone, this is my first official pullover, and I know that I have the right to travel unimpeded by government enforcements when they try to enforce statutes on me. He went back to his car for 5 minutes. I'll see how he reacts, and we'll take it from here. Just know I don't consent to anything. Yeah, I'm trying to get him on camera. He's standing off to the side, but they're behind the car right now. They're talking to each other. Cop showed up, and they're talking with each other right now. So I'll see how he reacts. I mean, I got the right. I'm not too nervous. I'm just worried about, are they going to infringe upon my rights and try to be bozo on my way like it's supposed to happen? comes a couple more of them, so we'll see what happens. I'm keeping my door locked.
Your name, Gary?
No, my name is not Gary.
It's not Gary?
No, it isn't, sir.
This is your vehicle?
This is my automobile.
This is your automobile?
My private property, yes, it is.
Okay. So, do you know a Gary then?
No, I do not.
Do not? Okay. So, this goes to back to it. Well, I ran the plate, comes back to a Gary.
Trooper, there's no plate on the back.
I ran what you have on the back of the vehicle, comes back to a Gary.
On the back says do not hire, non-commercial. There should come back to nobody. It says UCC 1-308. That's United Commercial Code. I reserve all my rights. I do not consent. I am traveling from point A to point B in my automobile. On my private property, going from point A to point B, wishing I could just be on my way.
So he's traveling from point A to point B, wishing to be on his way.
Okay. How you doing, officer? Might I get your name and badge number?
Foster, 178.
Hello, Foster. Hello, Canine Officer. May I get your name and badge number?
Officer Shackle, 211.
Thank you.
Can we get your name?
I'll give you my name. My name's Ron. That's my first name. I won't give you my last name, though, because you'll use it against me.
What? How will you use it against me?
Just, I plead the fifth on that. I plead the fifth. No, I don't have no warrants. I'm just a lawful, peaceful man traveling from point A to point B. I have no warrants. My name is Ron.
Do you have a weapon on you?
Nope, I have no weapons.
You realize this trooper has a legal reason to stop you. You're obligated to give him your information.
Well, I understand he has a legal reason, but he does not have a lawful reason. I'm just a private man traveling from point. Traveling from point A.
Request your information. If you give him your information, he'll do what he's going to do, give you a ticket, advise you, and you'll be on your way. It doesn't have to be a whole big thing.
I'm not making a whole big thing. I was just traveling in my private capacity in my automobile, going from point A to point B, trying to get somewhere, and this gentleman pulled me over.
He did pull you over, and I'm sure for no reason. And if he did,
but it may be a legal reason, but it's not a lawful reason. There's a difference.
Same,
no, it's not. It's really not.
And obtain your information.
I don't consent, and I plead the fifth. There's a difference between legal and lawful, and I know my rights. I'm just trying to get to where I'm going and wish to be on my way, officer. I'm not bothering nobody. I'm a lawful man. Now they're going to try to get a canine and everything, so we'll see what's going on. Anybody knows I've got no drugs on me, no weapons, so, and I don't consent. So if some capacity better like repost this or some shit.
Do you live in the city?
I don't answer questions, officer.
Alright. So I'll ask again, you're choosing to give me your name, date of birth, social security number. Any of that'll be sufficient.
I don't answer questions, officer.
So you're not going to answer the question on whether or not you're going to give us that information?
I don't answer questions, officer. I'm going to plead the fifth.
Sure. Well, You don't have the right to plead the fifth. You understand that? You have the right to take a citation to court and contest it. You don't have the right to not provide your information. That's actually a crime, and it's arrestable. You understand that?
I do not understand anything.
Okay. Well, let me explain it to you. Refusing to provide your information to a law enforcement officer conducting an investigation, it's a misdemeanor four. It means it's arrestable. You can be taken to the Stark County Jail for that. Okay?
Like I said, I'm just a man traveling from point A to point B in my private capacity. It's not a crime. It's a statute violation. It's not a lawful crime. I've committed no crime. I have a right to travel from point A to point B unimpeded. He's trying to enforce a statute. That's all this is about. I'm trying to travel from point A to point B. It may be unfamiliar to some of y'all, but I'm doing a lawful thing. Well, then you should know that I have the right to travel from point A to point B in my automobile unimpeded, trying to be enforced a statute upon.
Incorrect.
No, that is correct.
I'm
not driving.
You are.
I'm traveling in my automobile. Driving a commercial term. That's why I have non-commercial on the back and not for hire. Driving's a commercial term. I'm traveling in my private capacity.
Because if you give your information, you can give it to that officer, that trooper, and he can do what he's doing. We can be on our way.
I just wish to be on my way.
Well, we could all be on our way. All you got to do is give me or my partner here your social security number, a driver's license, any kind of identification. We can check you.
I'm not required by law to carry identification.
You are.
But I do not have identification.
No weapons and firearms?
I will answer that. No, I don't have no weapons and no firearms.
How can you answer that but nothing else?
Well, just to put you at ease so you don't think I've got something in here that, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't want you to be jumpy or anything, so I'm just saying.
I'm not jumpy.
No, you're not. I'm not saying you are, but I just don't want you to think that I may have weapons when I don't.
I still think that either way.
Pardon?
I still think that either way.
Well, I understand. That's probably what all cops think. Everyone's a suspect at all times, but I'm not a suspect.
No, I don't think you committed any crime.
Well, then there you go. You didn't think I committed any crime, so I should be on my way.
Well, it's unlawful
for this trooper to have me pulled over right now. He's enforcing a statute. He's trying to enforce a statute. He said I didn't have a front license plate. I'm not required to have one when I'm traveling in my private capacity. That's why I don't. That's why I got what I got on my automobile. I'm not required to have the driver's license.
And this is your vehicle?
This is my automobile. This is my private property, yes.
I have no idea why he pulled you over. I wasn't here for that. So, I mean, that's something you're going to have to take up with him in the court.
Well, lawfully, he should let me be on my way and there should be no courts involved. Yes.
What's that film? Just in front of you or behind you?
Whichever way, both. Sometimes it'll do inside the cab.
What's that?
I said both, and sometimes it'll do inside the cab. Inside.
I saw one of those the other day on a vehicle. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, you got to record for your own safety anymore, you know?
Expensive?
They can be. They can get expensive.
Is that one?
I mean, I don't know. What do you consider expensive?
Well, I mean, $100, $50 is probably expensive for me.
Yeah, it was around there.
They
can be more though.
Yeah. You from the state?
I'm not going to answer no questions, officer.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good. May I get your name and badge number, officer?
Where are you from?
May I get your name and badge number, officer?
I'm Bill Barnes. I'm the canine. I'm the canine that's going to handle everything today.
Okay.
I hear you.
Where are you from?
I'm from. I don't want to answer no questions right now. All right. I mean, if you're thinking.
In the Marine Corps?
Yes, I was.
Can you understand why you're just causing a problem? I mean, you were in the Marines. You know what it's like. We got a job to do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand. But the thing is I'm just traveling in my awful capacity as a man.
Because of you, we have no idea why he pulled you over. We're just here.
Well, he pulled over because he said in front of license, which I'm not required to have when I'm not engaged in commerce. I'm just traveling. So, I mean. I'm standing for my rights is what I'm doing. Well, if this goes any south, you guys will be violating my rights. I mean, there's a bunch of y'all surrounding my vehicle.
So, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to ask you to get the car.
I'm not, I refuse to abandon my property. I refuse to abandon my property. I'm refusing to abandon my property.
Okay, I'm ordering you out the car or it's going to be placed under arrest.
What lawful reason are you articulating? I got a crime to arrest me for, officer. You've got no reason to arrest me. I've not done nothing unlawful. I'm traveling in my private capacity.
This is what's going to happen. As much as I'm a man and I'm standing here alive today, this is what's going to happen. We're going to break that window. At which time that window's broke, I'm going to send this 100-pound Belgian Malinois in there. He's going to apprehend you. At which time I'm going to drag him and you out into the ground. If you continue to resist, you'll be paid compliance put on you to the point where you will no longer resist.
You're saying you're going to sick a dog on a lawful man who's being peaceful.
100%. This is your final. He's ready. I'm telling you as we speak.
I've done nothing unlawful, officer.
You are going to get bit by this canine if you do not act accordingly.
I'm acting lawfully.
Are you willing to open this door and come out?
I do not consent. I'm willing to do anything except be on my way.
Okay. Open the door or we're breaking it. Come out for you.
I'm going to exercise my Fourth Amendment right to not be intruded upon unlawful seizures. Look at this, guys. This is shit's real. This shit's fucked up, guys. Look, they're surrounding me. They're wanting to do this. They're really wanting to do this. I'm just a lawful man traveling in my private capacity, traveling in my private capacity, trying to get from point A to point B, which is my constitutional right. This is crazy, guys. This is fucking crazy, man. They're threatening me with violence because I'm trying to enforce one of my constitutional rights. Look. They're going to do this, man. Look, he's going to do this. I do not consent to any unlawful searches and seizures.
Stop it! Get out of the car!
Yeah, that's all we need to hear. I'm trying to get my composure because I just started cracking up. Not that it's actually funny, but to me, it was just so crazy that he would have allowed the situation to escalate to the point where they would actually come out with this dog. I'm like, dude, just get out the car, man. Like, come on. Like, when are you going to just sign? You can hear as things started to get more and more real for him that he started to sound like he wasn't as confident. But he was like, I'm standing up for my rights. You know, he made that clear. And I'm like, man, just get out the car. If you have no weapon in the car, you know, they did not charge you with anything. So all you have to do is comply, pretty much. Pretty much is comply. He escalated the situation and it didn't need to be escalated, but he was standing for his rights. And that is the type of stuff that gets us in trouble. Go ahead, Jenna. I see you popped up.
No, I'm just... Man.
I was just putting my time because you heard
him. We talked about earlier, man, the elderly woman, you know, they dragged her out of there quick. You know, he had a good conversation, talked real bad. And he finally got exactly what he knew he was going to get. That's why he was videotaping it the whole time. You know, we don't get to survive those type of situations.
That's what I was saying. Look at the sister with her son. I think it was it in the Baltimore area or something? And she had the shotgun, and they gunned her down right in front of her child and shot her child in the leg, too. And I mean,
yeah, they didn't care nothing about us. So the whole point is that we seen the young fella get kidnapped. They just knew he was a black child.
Mm-hmm.
Took him. He got away. Luckily, you know.
Yeah, it could have been another.
As you would say. Yeah, it could have been another one. And it's always something that always pop up. But I seen your OLG. We're going to come to you in a minute.
That's Brother Otis.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Brother Otis. Maybe he's having trouble with his phone.
Okay.
No,
yeah, we can hear you now.
Yeah,
I was just going to say quickly, there was another case I think I posted in the BTR too, where a black woman was traveling with a child, got run off the road. They actually sideswiped her, got out. When she stopped, the people got out of the car and beat and banged on her SUV with a baseball bat. I mean, broke out all the lights on all four corners, smashed her car and everything. When she finally got the police to come, she drove on home, I think. When she finally got the police to come, while she was there, the people actually called into 911, the people who did it. They mm-hmm. called into 911 and apologized because it was a case of mistaken identity. They said they thought that she was the mother of the child that had stole their child's phone earlier in the week and saw them driving down the road. Now, the reason I bring that up is because after those people called into 911, do you know they still have not prosecuted those people? They actually called in and admitted to harassing and running her off the road, and they have yet to be locked up. That shows you what white supremacy is all about.
Absolutely. And it's just, you know, like all of the different things that we talked about, the different articles that we discussed this evening, it's not speaking about the validity of the UCC code. That stuff can work in the court, but it doesn't work in real life. And you can self-identify as whatever you want to self-identify as.
And
if you're living in the real world, you have to understand that it's who's in power that dictates your identity when it comes to life or death, legal or any other situation. And you are really not living in the real world if you tell your child that they're Aboriginal, fine. But let them know that there's a reality outside of the confines construct of the life that we built for you. And in that world, you are considered black. And because they consider you black, you will be treated as a prisoner of war, and anything can happen to you no matter what your age is. And these are the examples. And you can give them some of the stuff we talked about tonight, and there's a whole myriad of other things that you can show them to prove to them what you're saying. And then you make sure you quell their fears, because they're going to be scared to hear about this stuff because it's not a comfortable thing to talk about as a parent. But then if you give them codified ways of being, if you express to them, do what you have to do to survive the moment, and we can handle it after you make it home, or if they take you to jail and we have to get you out of jail, or however the situation plays out, but you have to survive whatever is happening to you when you're in a one-on-one contact or, you know, 5-on-1 contact, and they have guns drawn at you. There's things that you are supposed to do to ensure, to the best of your ability, that you survive that situation.
You know,
and go ahead.
down to, like Scotty says, you're behind enemy lines, and self-preservation is number one. You cannot fight back laying in a coffin or brutalized and left unconscious by the slave patty rollers. I wanted to say one other thing about that lady. It was so bad that they didn't go after the people that called in, and you and I already know they got surveillance, they got the numbers that when the people called in.
Absolutely.
A couple of days later, those people drove past her house. She was actually on film at the local TV station saying she has to move because she says she feels threatened that the police are not protecting her and her son. So she's got to move. She said, I can't afford to move, but I can't afford to stay here either. So that means the law didn't protect her at all. They didn't even go after the people who called in and admitted that they did this crime. That's a felony.
Hey, guys, I need to take a station break if we're going to go into overtime, because I really feel like we need to get to the meat of this video and the things that this dude was saying, the codes that he was citing. You know, outside of racism, let's look at this from Negro Fuller's point of view. You know, we're not even going to mention racism. Was this dude correct or was he incorrect about his supposed rights? But let's take this break, and then we can come back and get into the meat of the conversation. Again, we can what's that? Go ahead, Jenna.
I say thank you.
Oh, no problem, no problem. All right, so we're going to take this break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Tando Radio Show. If you would like to chime into this conversation, call 704-802-5056. Hit the star key twice, and we'll see you unmuted. Please watch your background noise.
Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
Welcome back to Tando Radio Show. Oh, go ahead, Brother Ross.
No, you got it. You got it. You're fine. I just want to say something after you're done.
I would just welcome the family back to Tando Radio Show. Ready to get into this, the meat of this conversation, like they say, but what you got?
Oh, I just wanted to say something. My son was telling me yesterday that he knows a young man who actually was in school with him. Who liberated his straw man, and he said that he sat there and explained the process to my son, and it took him like around 2+ hours to really explain it to him, and he understood because it's something we had talked about before. But he said one thing that he noticed was that, because he said he no longer has a social security card, all of that stuff, but he said that the guy showed him this thick book with like 1,000 pages of the information regarding his liberation of his straw man, and that everywhere he goes, he carries these 1,000 papers in this giant book. So if he's ever pulled over by the police, he goes through and finds the papers to deal with that situation, and that's basically how he lives his life. And I was just like, and he said that, he said to me that it just seems like way too much to go through and to have everything about yourself stuffed into these pages, and you have to carry them everywhere to qualify you removing yourself from the system, quote unquote. And he just said that it just seems like too much. And you know, I was just like, it's bottom line is, in my opinion, it's fine, you can do that, and it's really helpful for the people who really know what they're doing in a court situation, I couldn't see its efficacy in real world situations, especially with the fascist governmental model and system that we're going into with this overt fascist model. So, you know, it's just another form of being bonded to their system. The difference is you just have these bunch of papers versus having the, I guess, the luxury of the electronic setup. And then, you know, beyond that, and of course, the account that they say is associated with all of that stuff. But outside of that context, you're still stuck having to prove yourself in some form or fashion to the same people. And that's what I wanted to say about it. So, and it's not a dig on it. It's just an observation. So go ahead, Jen. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, Scotty. Go ahead, Scotty.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
I would like to see where they won a court case, where these people are talking about these things. And without certain documents issued by the system, you can't operate in the system. It means you can't get a bank account. You can't do this. It's a whole bunch of stuff that requires that identification, okay? And every attorney, well, not, I haven't talked to a lot of attorneys, but a couple of attorneys I have watched their videos. They say that they be in court and those sovereign, those dudes come in and they cite this sovereign citizen type stuff, and you know what? They sit in jail until they comply. It never works in court, okay? Now, in terms of what this dude was talking about, now, the UCC code, let's talk about that because I hear a lot of sovereigns citing that. I looked it up. The UCC code is having uniform, first of all, it's not even a law. It's not even technically a code. This is a bunch of recommendations that have been written by private business organizations. They wrote this book to recommend to the states that they adopt these laws so that there will be easier for residents in different states to engage in commercial transactions. That's what the commercial means. Now, I did not get what he was saying when he was saying that I'm not in a commercial vehicle. Now, as I recall, most commercial vehicles, even in the state of North Carolina, they do. I'm talking like a tanker truck, a gas tanker truck, or you know, a delivery truck, a beer truck. They usually do have a license plate on the front and a license plate on the back. Now, if that's what he's arguing, I would have to see the Indiana statute of whether or not it applies to commercial vehicles and private vehicles. So I don't have the law. I don't know what the law in that particular state is, but the UCC,
in Ohio.
Okay, we would have to know if other residents in Ohio are required to have front license plates as well as rear. If it just says commercial vehicles,
yeah, that's why he asked him that too.
Right,
he asked him, just, where you from?
If it's just commercial vehicles, then he was right, but he was in the wrong place to try to assert that. Okay,
but you know what else happened too was that he didn't have a license in the car at all. All he had was a piece of paper that said this is not a commercial vehicle.
Right.
This is private property, and then it had a UCC code. I think he said 103 something something, and they thought that was his license plate, so they ran the UCC code that he had in on that paper.
And it turned out to be somebody's.
And it turned out to be this
plate.
Guy named Gary, because that was his actual license plate number.
Right.
So they're like, this got to be a stolen car because this UCC number belongs to this Gary person, but he's telling us he's Ron. So that was a discrepancy right there. So he's not even thinking the police are going to interpret that UCC code as a license plate.
Right.
And there he jacked up right there, because once they do that, it's like their alerts are going to go up. And they're like, what do you have in the car? You're not complying. You're not who
is
the car is.
Is this a stolen vehicle?
To, and yeah. You keep telling us you're not complying and you're not answering and you're pleading the fifth. Okay. All right. We got something for you. And it's four-legged and got fur.
Now, he stated that. He also stated incorrectly. Now, he stated correctly that there is no law requiring you to carry identification. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I do remember, I think it was the state of Arizona that tried to pass a law like that. I can't remember if it passed or not. But I know here in North Carolina, you're not required to have a state issue ID or any other sort. But what you are required to, if you're going to be operating a vehicle on the highway, you are required to have a state-issued driver's license, either from this state or from another state. So, and then, I mean, if I was the slave catcher, I would have got aggravated with him, too. They say vehicle. He say, I'm in automobile. Dude, come on, man. Like y'all not talking about the same thing. They talking about that motorized steel buggy that has a motor that you riding in. Vehicle, I'm talking about the automobile. And then he says, what he say about I'm not driving, I'm traveling.
Yeah.
This is ignorance. This is just, man, this is sound like somebody who been brainwashed with some bad information.
Information, exactly. And that's what I think is happening to a lot of people who do this. And when you're black doing this, you are right. More prone to be shot.
Now, if he was black, if he was black, they not giving him almost 20 minutes to plead his case and argue with them. As we just saw in the video with the black grandmother who said, wait a minute, why are you pulling me over? And then here come this slave catcher yelling at her, screaming at her, cursing her out, and physically threatening her. Okay? So this white dude, actually, they were being very, very patient. That was his white privilege in a system of white supremacy practicing slavery. Or a system of slavery practicing white supremacy, that was his benefit right there. They were giving him the benefit of the doubt and being very patient with him as he spouted all this nonsense.
And you know, the funny part is at the end of the video, because there's a black trooper there involved in the whole incident, so it's not all white state troopers. There's only one black male state trooper, but everyone else is white. And one of the white state troopers say at the end of the video, I did not want to have to do this to you, but you left me no choice. I hope this was worth it for you to disobey. And, you know, the result, because when the dog attacks him, they actually go to handcuff him while the dog still has his arm in his mouth. So as he's trying to pull away because he's just terrified and he's in severe pain, the dog is latching down even more. And they're telling him, put your arm behind your back with the dog still attached to the arm. Like, this is what happens to the guy. And then at the end, he said, I hope this is worth it. I really didn't. And he basically what you just said. You a white male. I really didn't want to go to this extreme, but you didn't want to give us ID. You didn't want to leave the vehicle. You were being, you know, a non-cooperative. You're citing all of these different UCC codes and all this nonsense. And you're telling me you're not going to comply. Now I got to treat you like a black person would be treated. And the truth is, a black person, like Oda said in the chat room, would not be treated that way. They would not have wasted a dog on them. They would have gave him bullets.
Yeah.
They would not have gotten no canine in any potential danger whatsoever. That dog's life is worth more than a black male in a vehicle. They would have lit him up, and it had just been another video on the news because he had filming equipment in his vehicle. That's what they were asking him about. They're like, how much you pay for that? He's talking about the filming equipment. And they were asking, well, how does it film? He said it can film in any direction. So he would have filmed his death and been on Facebook or something else, like the brother who filmed his own death, sadly. I'm forgetting his name off the top of my head. And his girlfriend was in the car and her daughter in the back seat when he was shot and killed.
Ross, you brought up something very important. And we got Colin Kaepernick right now out there giving survival classes on how to survive the police. Now, I would ask our listeners or anybody who is in the conference line, is this how you would tell your children, this how you would advise your children to interact with slave catchers? Like I tell my daughters, you comply, they ask you for your driver's license, registration, you give it to them. If they say they smell weed or whatever, you know, you just don't say nothing, okay? But what you do is you let them do what they gonna do, and then you call me. That's what you do. If they arrest you, then you call me. You live to dispute these things in court, okay? You don't try to adjudicate. That's right. You don't try to adjudicate law in the street, because you'll lose every time to these slave catchers.
Without question. And I told my son too, I said, if you have to get your ID, you ask them, officer, is it okay if I go in my right front pocket and get my ID to present it to you? And when they give you an affirmative, you slowly and deliberately do so. And, you know, it's just those little things that you can teach your child, because, you know, Tamir Rice is the greatest example. Children are not children in this system. You are a 250-pound, 6'4", hulking black male that they're terrified of in your 12-year-old little body. And it will pump you full of lead and not think twice about it in split seconds and not even give you a chance to even say, don't shoot. And that's pretty much what we have to explain to them. And it's a horrible thing. But think about it. It's the same thing that happens in Palestine. They got to tell their children, look, you might go out there and you think you're throwing a rock, and they have a sniper that will blow your head off, and they will dance in glee upon killing you. That's not easy for a Palestinian to tell their child, but that's what they have to tell their children. We can't lie to them. And it's not about terrifying them. There's going to be a psychological massaging that will have to come with that information. But the truth is, they have to be told the truth. If not, you know, you can tell them they're Aboriginal, you can tell them they're black, you can tell them whatever you want to tell them, but when the police see them, when white people in control of the system see them, they are black, and black people are treated as an insurgent population, and they have to understand that. So even if you have to raise them with what Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois calls dual consciousness, which means their consciousness of what you tell them they are, you raise them to know who they are according to your auspices and what you choose to do, and then what the world sees them as, so that they can function as sane human beings, understanding that they're prisoners of war, and to act in accordance with that and to do what they are told, like you said, to survive the moment. And we can deal with this in court at a later date, but you're still alive. Like Otis says, you can't go to court in a box. It just doesn't work. And that's our living legacy of genetic material taken out of the material form, which means that we no longer exist once we die. That's what it means when you lose a child. When you look at the story of Asar Seton Haru, that was what he chose, to live forever through his progeny. So as long as his genetic material was still in physical existence, then he was actually still in existence. Set chose to live forever, so he had no reason to have children. So he was impotent in regards to procreation, but his sexual appetite was ginormous. But he lived forever, so there's no need for him to care about children. When you look at what white people do, what's that book? Fantastic Voyage, Live Long Enough to Live Forever. That's why pedophilia is such a big deal. They're trying to live forever. They don't care about children, just like Seth. Asar said, I'm going to live forever through death and resurrection by genetic distribution through my progeny, the survivors who carry my genetic material and pass that on. Great example of that. Dr. Ben has over 60 grandchildren. He had 12 children and I believe over 60 grandchildren, if I remember correctly, or it might be great grands, but that's how many he had. So he'll be here for a very long time. But yes, that's the truth of it. Let's be honest with our children, and let's not only be honest with them, but also we have to be psychiatrists. We have to be there for them. We have to answer their questions. We have to give them an out, and an out means not being confused about the system and different tools they can use in their behavior and how they function and speak whenever they are in the company of being potentially apprehended by law enforcement, or even dealing with the average white citizen who deputizes themselves. They have to understand that too. The average person you come across that has a white face might be deadly. That young black male was just standing at the bus stop, hustled in a car, severely abused, and when they were loading the pistol to shoot him, that's when he chose to escape. That's happening every day, like the sister said in the video, every day. And we don't tell our children this stuff because they go to school and what do they have? All white teachers. So right there, there's an automatic trust and belief in what that white people are doing good things, because they teach me every day. They're my bus driver, they're my doctor, they're my dentist. Okay, yes, they are those things, but there are records of them being a lot of other things after hours. And you need to be aware of that, because you could potentially be in a life-threatening situation or a situation where you might be sexually terrorized. You know, let's be real with them. And try our best to give them the tools that they need so that they can be less confused And what you'll have is less confused adults, and eventually we'll have the numbers of us thinking on the same page to actually do something effective to facilitate real change in the system and ending it and replacing it with one that's just. Anything for me? You have to say anything, Jenna?
Man, you rounded it out pretty well, man. I asked a question recently, is that no matter what you believe in, you know, comedic spiritualist, aboriginal, Negro slave, any of those descendants, I asked the question that can we all recognize that part of us that we are searching for, but also recognize the reality of what we have to face every time we leave our place of residence.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was no. I say it was no because I didn't get no answer. And these type of things are happening. And this last clip we just played, it showed the difference in the people who, like you said, they have some sort of well, at least they believe that they have some sort of right, but there is none, not even for the white boy. What are they going to do to us if we respond in that manner? It's just a dangerous situation. So recognize everything and act accordingly. But for some reason, some of us don't want to do that. But we have one over tonight. Brother Scotty, if you wanted to add something in before we close tonight, Brother Raj, you can go ahead on and okay. Hit us with the prayer.
All right. I just wanted to... Oh, is that Scotty? You want to say something?
Yeah, just summing up that interaction. Look, with him being a white male, as I posted in the chat, if he'd have spoke respectfully, if he'd have gave even a minimal cooperation, they probably would have let him off with a warning. Okay? Even as a black man, look, one time I was coming from a bar in Charlotte late at night, a pool bar, had been playing pool in Charlotte, had just bought this used van for my girlfriend at the time. The lights, the brake lights and the tail lights didn't work. I get pulled over by this white cop, and this was how the interaction went. He got out of his car, he approached the window, and I said, "Officer, sir, may I ask you why you pulling me over?" He said, "Well, your tail lights is out." I said, "Well, sir, I just bought this van, and you know, from a girlfriend, and I was unaware that the tail lights wasn't working." Now, he had done run the tags already. He asked me, "Well, what address was the vehicle registered to?" So I told him, and I told him her name. And then he said, "Well, turn on your emergency lights and drive home safe." Okay, by my tone, by me not getting any emotions, "Oh, you pulling me over because I'm black," you know, or saying, "You got no right to pull me over." I probably would have got a ticket, if not worse. But because I was codified in my language and being respectful, I ended up driving home safe.
I agree. It's all about how you approach the situation. And it's really, it's not really, like I said, it's not questioning the validity of what the man was doing, because people who know how to do it right have been able to help themselves in some capacity. I'm not denying that. But the overarching truth is, it's not something that we should be doing, because we're in a system that's becoming more overtly fascist in ways that we are not used to.
Go ahead. Oh, yeah. And the thing is, I didn't even have a valid driver's license at the time. My driver's license was suspended, and he never asked me for it. But he was, I think he was taken off guard by how respectful I was that he ain't even asked me for a license.
Look at that. And see, sometimes it's not always about race. Sometimes it's just about simple common human decency and, like Scotty said, respect. sometimes that's all it takes to get people to kind of just deal with you in a more humane, equitable manner. It doesn't mean it's going to happen all the time. We know as Black people that the overarching reality is that most times it doesn't in some capacity, but you can even stem escalation. Even if they do, let's say, decide to give you a ticket or whatever, you can just stem the situation escalating beyond a ticket to you being in jail with your head beat in just by being respectful. And even you know, and you may not agree with them, but you don't have to escalate it to the point where they get to exercise even more tyranny on you. And that's the whole thing, you know, about minimizing contact to minimize conflict. You do as much as possible to mitigate situations preemptively so that you're not being reactionary. And Ross,
one more example, and I think Otis has a final comment before we get ready to close it out. Okay, now, in this situation, my insurance had lapsed because I mailed it in late. So it was in the system as being lapsed. But it had, I actually did have insurance. They just hadn't put it in the system yet. So I'm parked. I'm with my girlfriend, and her small son is in the back seat. And we pull over at a gas station in Charlotte. I go in, and I buy some drinks, and I come out. Now, the cop was already sitting there in the parking lot when I pulled up. I'm driving a white Camaro, by the way, and I'm in a quote-unquote hood. All right, we were traveling through. So this cop follows me, right, pulls me over, and then cites me for not having insurance. I didn't say a word. I just got the ticket, gave him my license, all of that. He came back with the ticket. All right, I ain't even tried to dispute anything with him. When I got to court, I told the judge that, you know, I was late with my insurance payment, but I got insurance. Here's my card. But I said, I'd like to ask the question, why did he pull me over in the first place? I would just went to the store, pulled in, pulled out. He got right behind me. What probable cause did he have to run my tag? Was there a reported stolen white Camaro in the area or something? And that's why he was running it or what? Why did he? I didn't say nothing about me being Black now. I just said, what was his probable cause for running my tag, which I felt like was a search on my property, right? Technically. So anyway, the cop got mad.
I wanted to comment on the video.
Yeah, the cop got mad in the courtroom because of what I had just stated about. He didn't even have probable cause to be running my tag in the first place. I wasn't speeding. I wasn't breaking the law or nothing like that. So the ticket got thrown out. But I still had to pay the cost to court. So my point is, there's a time and a place to dispute these things when you're interacting with slave catchers. And Jenna, y'all got another call from 470.
Yes, yes. You go ahead, area code 470. Go ahead. Your mic open.
This is Rob in Atlanta. I wanted to comment on that video. I never heard him act. I never heard him reiterate, you know, can I go? He never asked or even insisted that he you know, proceed with his travels. Also, he wanted to spark up a conversation about, you know, are you from here? And that right there might have been a stereotype within itself, because if he was from here, or maybe, you know, might have treated him different versus he was from, you know, from some other place and want to, like I say, put a stereotype on them, like, what are you doing in town or whatever else, you know, whatever else they can try and pull up to have a conversation and get information to get you to cooperate. But, yeah, I just wanted to comment on those two. And good show. I wanted to say it was a good show, and I appreciate what y'all fellas are doing.
Thanks, brother. We appreciate you, too, and thanks for the commentary as well.
Yes. Thank you.
I know that also Brother Otis wanted to say something earlier as well.
I won't take long. I just want to say to you, gentlemen, I hope you don't take it as an insult. I applaud Scotty for creating the platform, and I also would like to give kudos to you young men for having the patience to parse this out so people can understand. You got to learn in these situations which facts are relevant to your safety and your preservation. Because you may be right about a lot of things, but they won't save you, just as Scotty explained. You have to be aware of what facts will get you out of that situation safely. You cannot be trying to prosecute, I'm black, I can't know. Understand you're a human being under duress and pay attention to what is the best way to get yourself removed from that situation so you can live to fight tomorrow. I'd much rather you have injustice done to you at 18 or 19 and you're around at 50 to fight injustice rather than you be another casualty. I applaud you gentlemen for being able to parse through this tonight. Much, much, much respect.
Thank you. Back at you, brother. I appreciate that, because the main thing, like I said, is not to question the validity of it. It's just like I'm not questioning the validity of people's self-identification. It's about something that I remember Dr. Wilson saying. She said about the job of a psychiatrist. She said the job of a psychiatrist is to get their patient to understand and process the reality that they live in, even if they don't want to. And the thing that I'm saying is that I believe all of these ideologies that are being spread around are distractions. But the sad part is that this stuff is causing life-threatening situations for black people that we could avoid if we function under the auspices of dealing with reality. And it doesn't mean, if there's ways that you can legally get things handled in this system for yourself as a melanated person to make your life experience better and for that of your family to be better, by all means, try it. I'm not saying don't do that. But when those things cloud your vision about reality and the real world you live in, those mistakes you make when the time is of essence and it's most important, which means in the moment, not after the fact, but in the moment, those decisions that you make can cost you or your offspring their life. If your child does not understand what it means to be classified as black by the people who dominate you in this system versus the self-identification, you might be sending your child out with a self-imposed death sentence that they got from mom and dad. And you know, as a parent, you're trying to do the best that you can. So it's not a judgment on your parenting skills. It's just another paradigm shift of thought and perception that you can take with you, so that when you talk to your child, you give them a holistic picture so that they understand that when they're not in eyeshot of you, when they're out of your physical presence, there's a certain way they must carry themselves and understand that they are viewed in this system, so that when they do have encounters, they know how to function with their optimal survival as the end game at all times. That's all I'm trying to say. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yo, you, man, all of y'all just been smashing it all evening. Man, we have to teach our children our past, whatever your truth is. Mm-hmm. And also make sure, like Brother Rod said, that when they go out there into this world, there's a different mentality that you're going to be met with. And sometimes it's not worth it, because that may be the last time that you disputed something. And that's just our reality. And we have to teach them our reality. I have 5 children myself. Make sure they come back home. But with that being said, hey, make sure y'all come check us out, Real Life, on Tuesdays, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We do this all the time.
Yes, sir.
With that being said, Brother Roz hit us with the prayer. Brother Scotty, thank you for having us. Shout out to Dave on his birthday. Y'all,
happy Earth
y'all
Day.
Y'all beat up on him for that, you know what I'm saying, Monday.
Yes, thank you, Scotty, so much for giving us this platform. And thanks to the other callers and listeners that were with us this evening. We appreciate you all. And we're going to check it out now. So we'll start the prayer. Creator.
Oh, real quick, before you do it.
Sure.
Hope that y'all found this discussion constructive for your time tonight. I know we went over a little bit. Thank you again, Scotty.
Yes.
Brother Otis, all the other callers. Brother Rob down there in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And Again, Real Life the Radio Show, Tuesday nights, 9 o'clock. Check us out. Go ahead, Brother Rise. Peace.
All right. We'll start the prayer now. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times and all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another black person. It has been time to replace white supremacy with justice ASAP. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is, I am. The all can, I can. The all does, I do. Thanks again for being with us this evening, this Friday. Have a safe and productive weekend. Please stay away from slave catchers and race soldiers and do the best that you can to stay safe. Peace and love. One love.
Peace. Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.